From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Even with movie theaters largely shut for much of the past year, the movie industry did continue to churn out new films. It's how audiences watch them that changed, with planned theater releases continually scrapped in favor of at-home streaming services. Now, as Hollywood prepares for its annual Academy Awards ceremony, the show must go on. And although the Oscars event itself will look different, this year's nominees are drawing some praise for their creativity, diversity, and simply providing entertainment despite the challenges of making movies in a pandemic. Exchange listeners, what movies were your favorites over the past 14 months? How did you like the experience of watching them at home? And if you're a true Oscars fan, what movies do you think deserve these nominations and which do you think do not? Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. And our phone number is 800-892-6477. We have two guests. Angie Lane is here. She's the executive director of Red River Theaters in Concord. Angie Lane, welcome back. Good to have you.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
Also with us, Amy Diaz, editor at The Hippo. And Amy, good to have you back once again. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
So both of you, for years, you know, when we've talked about movies, we've talked about the competition that traditional movie theaters face from streaming services. But over the past 14 months, there's been a real convergence where these Oscar-nominated films were released not in theaters, but for at-home viewing. Now, we've seen a little bit of that in the past, but this was a large shift. And Amy, I wonder, how has this affected the types of movies that are made and the types of movies that are nominated?
Well, I think what it did this year is that it gave some of the movies, you know, I think this is a really great list, and I think all of these movies could compete in a normal year, but I think it gave some of these movies a little more space to find an audience, you know, especially among critics and people who vote for awards. And so you have something like The Father or Minari or Nomadland really be able to kind of build up its Oscar buzz, build up its, you know, award season buzz, because there aren't, you know, usually you'd get that crush of movies right at the end of the year. And so you'd have all these movies, blockbusters, family movies, and Oscar hopefuls. And here everything had space this year.
Oh, that's interesting. Talk a little bit more about that, Amy, sort of how these movies being on streaming services instead of in traditional theaters allowed them to create or find an audience, as you said.
Well, so I think with Nomadland, there was some, you know, a little bit of release here and there at maybe a film festival. I think one of them was virtual, and then maybe it got into some theaters and then it hit streaming. So there was like this buzz that built up about it, so that by the time it hit streaming, I was really excited to see it. I think it that one's on Hulu. And so I was excited to go check it out. And I think that, you know, that's true of a lot of these movies, that they kind of had their space to, you heard about them a lot, you know, they were talked about, and then finally you could see Minari. I felt like the buildup for that, I was hearing about that for months, what a great movie it is. And it finally came out and I was so happy because that is my favorite, I think, of this bunch. So, you know, every single one of them felt like they kind of had their moment.
Angie, how about you? Does the assumption that viewers will be seeing a movie on a smaller screen change producers and directors' ideas about what to go for? I mean, you know, for example, if someone was thinking, I want to make a visual epic drama like Dunkirk, but if everybody's going to watch it on TV, maybe not. I mean, does this change what producers decide to produce?
Yeah, I would say there's definitely, you know, filmmakers and producers that have their style, their vision, and they will not, you know, that's not going to change. But I think that for, you know, newer filmmakers, that could definitely change the outlook of how they are, you know, knowing that they may be delivering it to, you know, a streaming service. But, you know, we always hear about the younger people like watching movies on their phones, which blows my mind, because there's like nothing like watching it on the big screen, in my opinion. But yeah, I think that there's going to be some filmmakers that will never change their vision about the way they film, the way they believe it should be shown. But I think as the landscape changes, that I have to think that it will change the way future filmmakers think about how they create these works.
Wow. Well, and Angie, you know, as a person whose business it is to watch movies, how did this whole sort of newfound accessibility, you really can watch at home any old time you want, how did that change your own relationship with film? Go ahead, Angie.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny because, you know, when it all started, it's so wonderful to be able to engage our audiences by being able to provide a virtual cinema choice and, of course, being able to recommend things that are streaming. But I think that there is, at least for our community and from the feedback I've heard and for myself, there's like this fatigue, right? Because we have so many different streaming services, so many different things just coming at us. And it's really highlighting, and I think it's for, in some ways for me, it's like the COVID silver lining of being able to understand what you have missed from what you've lost. And like in the same way, like take out like a treat, like you're like getting food at home and now I cannot wait to eat in a restaurant. And similarly, like our community is very much like, when can I see a movie? It doesn't matter what you're showing, I'm gonna show up because the experience is what they're missing. And also just the presentation of seeing film on the big screen, it's just so different. And I think, you know, I think in some ways that fatigue will benefit us particularly, but the industry overall. But I don't think that we are in any way going to lose out to the streaming services. Like people are ready to come back.
Really, that's interesting. Amy, what do you think? And again, as somebody who, you know, lives for movies, how has this whole change affected the way that you feel about movies and your relationship with them?
Well, so I do think that to use the Oscar list as an example, the best pictures are probably particularly well suited to being viewed at home. They tend to be a lot of intimate stories, you know, even when they're set against bigger historical events, you're really focusing on the person and their inner life. And I think that's why some of those bigger movies, there was a Steven Spielberg West Side Story that I think was supposed to come out at the end of last year, and it's been pushed to the end of this year. So that's something that I think they absolutely want to hold back for a big screen, because that's part of, you know, what you're seeing is these things happening, you know, huge on the big screen. A good example is also Godzilla versus Kong. So that movie came out about 2 weekends ago, and it's available on HBO Max, but it also did surprisingly well at the box office. So places where theaters were open, you know, people showed up. And I think it's because they want to see that, you know, you want to see two giant things fight. You want to see them fight on a giant screen. So I absolutely, you know, that movie, which by the way, a silly movie, but so much fun. you know, that's absolutely the kind of movie that I want to see on a big screen. I do think watching these movies on a smaller screen, I find myself, we were talking before about Thunder Force, this new movie on Netflix. And it's a fun movie. It's a silly movie. And I think I probably give it a pass in a way I wouldn't on a big screen, because you are just sort of relaxed in your house and maybe there's a lower threshold for enjoyment. So I definitely am looking forward to getting back and seeing, you know, those big movies on a big screen.
Wow. Yeah. It's hard to imagine, you know, Jurassic Park or Dunkirk or Out of Africa, you know, watching them on your phone or your TV. My TV's not that big. Just seems a lot less satisfying. And I love what you said, Amy, about, you're right, these Best Picture nominees are sort of more intimate portraits that work for that smaller screen. I want to invite our listeners again to join us, and then lots more to talk about. Again, we are looking at the movie industry today with the Oscars coming up. We're reflecting on the enormous challenges the film industry and movie theaters have faced, and what kind of films are being made in spite of these obstacles. And listeners, we'd love for you to join us with your thoughts, how your own movie watching has changed in the past year, what you've been watching at home, and if you're an Oscars nerd and you've been following who's getting these nominations and who isn't, we'd of course love your thoughts on that too. Our number is 800-892-6477, 800-892-6477, and our email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Angie, I want to throw this email to you. Matt writes, in December, I rented a theater at the Cinemagic in Hooksett for a movie my partner and I were excited to see. It made a great Christmas present, and I was able to relax, feel comfortable, and enjoy. Not something we plan to do all the time, but a nice treat. I was sad to hear that the theater is closing, but hope other theaters offer that same option. I don't know, is this something you're able to do at Red River, Angie? Or would that just be too complicated to allow someone like a special treat? We're going to a movie, just you and me.
No, absolutely. I mean, we opened it up for a special Valentine's Day rental for couples, and we basically sold out. It was fantastic, and people were so wonderful. And really what it comes down to for us, because we're so small, you know, we're just an independent nonprofit theater. So our team is so tiny. So we are doing rentals, and we've announced it through our email list, but have yet to really push it out completely because we are simply, you know, we're getting great feedback and getting bookings, but we have literally four people on the team and one theater manager. So we're trying to make sure that we don't, you know, exceed that person's bandwidth, and I'm pinch hitting too. So you can definitely reach out to us, and we are definitely doing rentals. It's just that we are doing them very limitedly for now until we are able to have like a fuller team, or hopefully by that time we'll be reopened. But yeah, it's a great way to come back to the theater, feel safe. And we feel like it's pretty, you know, we do up to 5 people for a certain amount, and then we'll do up to 20 people total, and social distancing and, you know, all of those protocols. But it can be affordable if you want to get out and just feel like you're at the movies again.
Wow. Matt, thank you for writing. Again, our email is exchange@nhpr.org, and our number is 800-892-6477. Amy, when we've talked before, you know, you've talked about like the crush of movies that happens towards the end of Oscar season. You yourself, you know, you got 3 kids, you've got a job. How has the convenience factor played into your own movie watching this year? Have you found yourself actually able to watch all those movies that you're writing about?
Yes. So that is actually one of the great things about this year's Oscars, is that all of these movies, and thanks to Angie Lane and Red River, the very last one came available last Friday. The Man Who Sold His Skin was an international film, and it was the last one for me to find. So I have 2 others I still need to watch, but they're all available. And that is so great, because some years, even with all the theaters open, you know, some films aren't available for months, or, you know, they're only available at one theater, you know, way out in Boston somewhere. So it's been really convenient for me. And I say that even though I do wish that I could go back and see some of these movies on a big screen. And even though these movies are more convenient, and not just the Oscar nominees, but sort of a lot of these artier movies that have come out in the last few months, there are still, I have this huge list of movies I need to catch up on, because there are, you know, all of these releases, especially the smaller releases, that are available. And so it's tough, because on the one hand, I don't want to lose that ability to see all these great things, but I definitely want, you know, theatrical distribution back. I want the big screen back. The popcorn I don't have to make, you know. I'm looking forward to all of that.
Well, to that point though, Amy, you know, people do have to subscribe to quote unquote all these streaming services. And, you know, like you, obviously that's your job, but someone like me who doesn't watch that many movies, but occasionally I enjoy, you know, watching a movie. Sometimes I read the lists of how many streaming services you have to subscribe to, and I think, okay, I'm not going to subscribe to 7 streaming services. So how do you sort that out, Amy? How do you help people figure that out?
Yes. So there are, I feel like every month there's a new service that you just have to subscribe
right
to. But this year, actually, so for the, again, to use the Oscars as an example, I think I tallied it up, and 18 of the nominated movies, this includes shorts, are available on Netflix. And that is by far the outlet to find the most of the movies that are on a streaming service. And then there are others sort of spread around. Hulu has the next little bunch, and then Amazon has some, and Disney Plus has some. And a lot of these movies, I will say though, so there's movies like Nomadland is, I think, an example of this. It's on Hulu, but you can also just rent it through however you rent movies, Google Play or iTunes or Amazon or whatever. So that some of the movies are available like that too. So they're on one streaming service, but if you don't want to join a whole new streaming service just to see one movie, you can also rent them independently.
How have you, Angie, set up your own sort of internal streaming service for your members?
So yeah, we can actually, we've worked with all the different distributors to basically create a great virtual cinema library. And we are offering, like, the Oscar shorts are available, which is like wildly popular for us every year. So it's so wonderful we were able to offer that. And then of course we have a lot of titles people probably may never have heard of, but they are great discoveries if you kind of hit the wall with all of the other streaming services. We have a lot of titles that you might not be able to just simply find. And we do have some of the Oscar nominees on our virtual cinema too. So it is working with individual distributors in the same way we would book for our actual theater. So each individual one, you're accessing it through Red River, but you're really accessing it directly from them. So it's been great. It's a wonderful way for us to engage our community while we are temporarily closed. But you know, it's still an engagement effort. It's definitely not something that's replacing being open for us financially. But I love that our community has really adapted, because it is, you know, for some people, for me, I'm not a tech person. So it's like getting my HDMI cords, so I can see it on my bigger screen and things like that. But they have really adapted well to it, but by no means is it a replacement for Red River.
Is it something, Angie, you think you'll continue with even once, you know, we're able to gather safely in large numbers?
That's a great question. I mean, it remains to be seen whether the distributors will allow us to, just because they have done this specifically because of the reality that we're in. That was nothing that we would ever be able to offer otherwise. So it'll be interesting. I have not heard yet whether or not this was something that we will be able to sustain, or whether it would be something we'd want to sustain, just simply because, you know, like I said, when you buy the ticket, you're, you know, we'll get 50% and then we'll get minus like any of the fees that they're charging us. So, you know, it's a wonderful way to deal with the reality we have now, but I don't know if it's going to be something that will remain as an option.
You know, I'm curious, Amy, how the film industry even made movies over this past year, you know, given restrictions on large gathering, given restrictions on travel, and just the fundamentals of not wanting your whole cast and crew to come down with COVID. How did they do it?
With difficulty and money, apparently. Right. So I read a story in Variety about the set for, I guess it's a new Jurassic World movie. And there are so many things that they're doing, you know, I think regular testing, their reminders to change out your face masks, you know, a couple of times during the day. They were describing color-coded pods. So, you know, today you're working in the green part of the set and it has these certain restrictions, temperature checks, and, you know, all these different ways to keep people physically separated on the set. So it described something that you kind of think, when you think, what does a movie set look like? You know, you picture maybe people crowding behind the camera to see what's being shot. Well, you don't want people crowding behind the camera. So they said everyone got an iPad so they could see the camera while standing 6 feet apart. And someone in that story estimated that it's about 10 to 15% of a film budget now is, you know, coronavirus related adjustments that they've had to make. So I think they can do it. You know, we tend to hear about the films being made when they have to shut down because of, a little COVID outbreak. But so they're doing it, they're shooting movies, but it does sound like there's all this extra work that's involved.
Wow. Well, coming up after a short break, we'll get into those Oscar nominations, some of the specific movies. We'll play clips from those films too. And listeners, you can join us. Tell us how your own movie watching habits have changed. Or if you've been following the Academy Awards, what films that got nominated attract your attention? Which ones less so? Join us with an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or call 800-892-6477.
I believe in a concept called pay it forward.
Stephen Randall of Northfield recently became a member of NHPR's Leadership Circle.
because I realized the value that it provided to me personally. And so this is my way of making sure that this news source stays around for everybody.
You can join Steve and Pay It Forward when you give $100 a month as a member of NHPR's Leadership Circle. Learn more at nhpr.org/leaders.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, a dramatic year at the movies. With the upcoming delayed Academy Awards, we're reflecting on which films receive recognition and also how the industry itself will emerge after a tumultuous year. And listeners, let's hear from you. Are you someone who really wants to see movies in a big theater? Or have you found you prefer watching from home? And if you've been following the Oscars, what nominated films stand out to you? Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call 800-892-6477. We're talking with Angie Lane, Executive Director of Red River Theaters in Concord, and also Amy Diaz, Editor at The Hippo. And let's talk about the movies and the actors nominated this year. And Amy, to you first, just overall, as a group, how does this slate of nominees stack up? What do you think?
I think this is a really good year. You know, not every movie nominated in every category is my favorite, but they're all pretty good. And the best picture list, even though there are a few more I would have snuck in there, it's a pretty solid list of movies. So, you know, I think there was a thinking at the beginning of the year, you know, as things started to shut down, oh, what is this year's award season going to look like? Is it going to be all this, you know, crazy stuff? But in the end, for better and worse, none of the crazy stuff really got in there. And this is a perfectly respectable slate of movies that I think could stand up to any year.
Is that what you're hearing from your colleagues, Angie, you know, people who really follow this, that this is a respectable list? Pretty good.
I would agree, definitely. And I just have to give a shout out to Sound of Metal, who's on the Best Pictures. That is a New Hampshire connection. Chris Stinson is a filmmaker producer with his team at Live Free or Die Film. So I mean, personally, I love seeing that up there, you know, little New Hampshire. But yeah, I have to agree with Amy.
Wow. So The Sound of Metal. And just remind us briefly, Amy, what Sound of Metal is about, and then we'll play a little clip from it.
So this stars Riz Ahmed. He plays a drummer who in like a hard rock duo who loses his hearing. And it's kind of very abrupt. And then he's just sort of thrust out of his life. You know, his whole life is around music. He lives in a RV with his girlfriend and they tour, and that's kind of, you know, his career, his life, his romantic partner, it's all wrapped up in music, and then losing his hearing and how does he sort of rebuild his life. It is a really good performance from Riz Ahmed, who I've seen on TV shows before, but this was the first time I saw him sort of like as the focal point of a movie. He was great. He's nominated for leading actor. There's also a supporting actor nomination. And I think it has a screenplay nomination, just a really solid movie.
Yeah, so Paul Racy got the supporting actor nomination. And as you said, Riz Ahmed got the best actor nomination. And this was also nominated for Best Picture. So now that we've whetted listeners' appetites, let's just hear a little bit from Sound of Metal.
Your hearing is deteriorating rapidly.
We'll come back. Till then, Lou, we just keep going, okay?
No.
Lou, no. Let's play tomorrow. Let's see what it's like, okay? I'm gonna be like a click track. You can play to me.
You understand me? I can't. I'm deaf. I'm deaf.
Okay, so a highly praised performance there from Riz Ahmed. Another movie that I want to ask both of you about that seems, you know, not like what you would expect from a Best Picture nomination is Nomadland. So, Amy, I just love your thoughts on that one, too.
So this one stars Frances McDormand as a woman who kind of lets go of everything, moves into a van and lives, you know, what they call the nomad life. She drives around kind of from temporary job to temporary job. You know, it's that to me is kind of the backdrop of, again, this study of a character, a woman who's going through really profound grief. She's lost her husband. She's lost her town because it was a factory town that the factory shut down. And so that was kind of the end of the town. It's a very beautiful movie. I believe it is nominated also for cinematography. Frances McDormand is nominated for Best Actress. And so one of its big nominations is for Chloe Zhao as director. And she is one of two women nominated this year in Best Directing, which that makes me so happy. And then she has won, I think, most of the precursor awards to the Oscars. So, you know, she's got a really good shot this year.
Well, let's hear a little bit from Nomadland.
You are one of those lucky people that can travel anywhere.
Yes, ma'am, I know.
And they sometimes call you nomads.
My mom said that you're homeless. Is that true?
No, I'm not homeless. I'm just houseless. Not the same thing, right?
No.
Again, that's a clip from Nomadland, up for a bunch of awards, including Best Picture and Best Actress for Frances McDormand. Again, you can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. What movies caught your attention this year? What did you enjoy watching? And how do you feel about the whole experience going from the theater to your house? Again, you can join us at 800-892-6477. And both of you, let's go to a call. Jamie is in Epping. Hi, Jamie. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I thought it was so funny that this was the topic this morning. I just had a thought cross my mind. I wonder if kids in the future will go to the movies like we used to. And I'm a huge fan of watching at home, mostly because I always have to go to the bathroom so I can pause it and go. But I remember living in New York City, going with six or seven of my closest college friends to the original opening Matrix on opening night. And it was such an incredible experience. And it really is different than watching at home, especially for those kinds of movies. But even comedies like Bridget Jones' Diary, I went on opening night as well. And it was just amazing when everyone laughed at the same time. And it's different. So kids will miss out on something if it completely changes. And I'm wondering how that will evolve in the future.
Oh, my gosh, Jamie, I'm so glad you called. And I'm dating myself here, but I remember watching the first Jurassic Park when it came out. And I saw it at a huge, 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 like, IMAX-y theater. And honest to gosh, I thought, you know, a dinosaur was going to step on my head. So, you know, there is something about that. What about that, Angie? What do you think about sort of generational preferences?
No, I am with Jamie, just because I think that, like, if you just think about it, just going to the movies and not any of the other parts of it, it truly is an experience, right? And you might laugh harder, and you feel the energy in the crowd of, and as you react like a unit to the film. And I think that if hopefully that the future generations will at least go to the movies at some point and realize that there is like this experience in some way that is not, you know, you can't have that at home and you can't have that on your phone. And I, you know, I'm with you. Like, I like being in my pajamas and being able to like pause, but they're two different experiences, right? And I think that I don't think one is particularly better than the next if you're someone who just enjoys, you know, being at home, but there's nothing that's going to beat that energy of being in the theater. And whether or not it is a blockbuster or it is an intimate narrative, like, I've cried with strangers, right? I've turned to strangers after film. Maybe it's just me, but like, you literally talk to strangers, especially at Red River, because, you know, that's who we are. Like, you meet your community members because you're like literally either talking about like that you're angry about what just happened, or you're crying and you're, you know, you're like grabbing a tissue from a stranger. I just think that there is something about it that is irreplaceable.
So what about generational preferences, though? And, you know, I'm sure Jamie agrees with you, Angie, and I totally get what you're saying, you know, about the Kleenexes and talking to strangers. But what about generational preferences? What's your thought?
It's shocking, right, when you hear people watching a full feature-length film, like, on their phone, which, like, is crazy to me. But I think, you know, I think that when you hear, I don't know if you've ever heard about, like, libraries becoming like having another life because all of these young hipsters are like going to the library again, right? But I think that that's with a lot of things, with a lot of art, like people are able to rediscover and value that and value what that experience is. So although I believe that it is, you know, technology will offer a lot of different ways for people to access film. And in some ways that's wonderful because that means there's more access to these works. But at the same time, I still believe that there is this other experiential part of going to the movie theater that you cannot replicate. And it is something that I think COVID has at least highlighted, at least for our community, of what they're missing right now.
Well, and our producer Jane Vaughn, who put together today's show, reminds me that when Dumbledore dies in Harry Potter, everyone in the theater is crying. So there's another one of those community experiences. Yeah. So anyway, again, you can join us with an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can give us a call like Jamie did at 800-892-6477. So Amy Diaz, I noticed on the list of Best Picture nominees, there are two pictures concerning sort of political unrest in this country in the 1960s. There's The Trial of the Chicago Seven. There's Judas and the Black Messiah. What do you think, Amy? Why is this a focus of filmmakers at this time?
Well, I think, and both of those movies even have some history points that sort of overlap. And to me, one of the cool things about that is you can kind of see two different filmmakers, you know, take on these elements of history. And I personally thought that Judas and the Black Messiah did it better. That was, to me, the stronger movie. I think that those are appealing for a variety of reasons. You know, that was a part of history. I don't honestly know the age of the filmmakers here, but it's a part of history that I think people are re-examining. I think that you can draw a lot of parallels on those movies to, you know, things happening today. And I think that makes them appealing. That I think that's kind of how they sold both of those movies when they were, you know, doing trailers and stuff for them. So I think that is part of the appeal. You know, they're looking back at a piece of history that's not so far away and that has so many connections to the current, you know, political climate. Both of them are good movies. So The Trial of the Chicago Seven is an Aaron Sorkin movie, and Judas and the Black Messiah, this is the movie that Daniel Kaluuya famously muted at the beginning of his Golden Globe acceptance that he got nominated for. He's nominated here again, and he gave a really excellent performance as Fred Hampton. The thing with this movie is that it has two lead actors. I don't know what else to call them. The two lead actors are both nominated in the supporting category because of all sorts of Oscar voting strangeness. So they're going up against each other, but I think it's Daniel Kaluuya. It's Daniel Kaluuya and Lakeith Stanfield both did a great job, but I think Daniel Kaluuya is going to pull it out.
Wow. Yeah. That's a little funny, isn't it, Amy? I mean, two actors in the same movie, both nominated for Best Supporting Actor. Have we seen that before?
I don't think so. It's So apparently this movie has no lead, I guess, is how they're saying it. I think so. I've listened to a couple of Oscar, you know, real Oscar nerd podcasts about this, and it has to do with how they tabulate the votes and where you get the most votes first. And you can be voted for in, like, you can't be nominated for the same role in two different categories. So if they got more votes first in Best Supporting, that's where it lands up. And I guess people could watch this movie and say, oh, it's Lakeith Stanfield is the lead, so I'm going to vote for Daniel Kaluuya in Best Supporting, or the opposite. I think you could make a case either way. And so that's just sort of how it ended up in the nominations.
Wow. Who knows how members of the Academy really make those votes. Let's hear a little bit from Judas and the Black Messiah.
Deputy Chairman Fred Hampton of the Illinois Black Panther Party.
Repeat after me.
Again, that's a clip from Judas and the Black Messiah. And as you said, Amy, it's about the betrayal of Fred Hampton, head of the Illinois Black Panther Party, by William O'Neill, who is an FBI informant. Again, listeners, join us with the movies that have been catching your attention. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. www.blackpantherpublic.org or with a call to 800-892-6477. You know, Angie, much has been written about the diversity of this year's nominees. How much has this been an issue in Oscar-nominated movies before, Angie? You know, the lack of diversity that we've seen in years past.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's every year. You know, they always talk about it. And even when we have, you know, people that are, you know, the firsts and people are, you know, stepping up for women and people of color, you know, there's still a major problem in Hollywood, right? Because it's about the people who are in power and whose stories are they telling. And so I think obviously it's wonderful to see when you have like a Chloe Zhao, who I believe, I don't know, Amy, am I right? Is she the first Asian woman to be nominated for Best Director?
I think so.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are great, right? But it's awesome, right? Someone has to break through that door. But it is like, oh, geez, how long has the Oscars been around? Like, you know, and the fact that, you know, Amy pointed out there's two women. Like, oh, wow, usually you can only have one woman in there. So it's just, I think that there's a lot of work to be done. I think that the criticisms are fair and that, you know, Hollywood is similar to a lot of the other structure and organizations that have, you know, systematic racism built in there. And the stories that are being told are from the point of view of the people who have that power and have those roles, right? So yeah, it's wonderful to see that there are, you know, we have some more diversity here this year and that these, you know, two women directors, but I mean, I'm similar. I think it would be wonderful to see a whole slate of women directors up there for, you know, Best Director and, or, you know, a wide variety of people's perspective, maybe LGBTQ or, you know, another person of color. So I think, you know, until they're not special, until they're not like, whoa, look at that. I think, you know, there's a lot of work to be done.
The Best Director category especially seems to have had trouble with, you know, women. Only one woman has ever won Best Director, Kathryn Bigelow. And as you said, this year, it's notable that there are two female directors on that list, Chloe Zhao and Emerald Fennell. What impact, Amy, does diversity have in terms of who makes and who stars in the movies? What does that have on what we, the audience, get to watch?
Well, so here's my hopeful, I guess this is my wish for all of this, which is that because we have all these streaming services, so, you know, someday we'll all be going back to the movies, but these streaming services will still exist. They'll still need content. And my hope is that because of the buzz and maybe the box office of some of these movies and, you know, their more diverse casts and crews, that people, especially in streaming services who need content, will, you know, take a chance on more people and more stories. I was listening to an interview with Lee Isaac Chung, who's the director of Minari, and he was talking about like the importance of just getting more stories out there, more people and more stories. So, you know, the optimistic read of this is that maybe because we have all these outlets, not just movie theaters, but also streaming services, there will be more opportunity. And every time, you know, so, okay, it's not a big deal to have two women nominated this year. So maybe we can take a chance on more women directors in the future. You hope that that is how the people with the money and the people with the power to kind of pick what films get made, what films get released, that's how they see it. That, you know, other things came before and worked and got buzzed. So we can tell even more people's stories, get even more people out there. Because that is, I think, what people respond to. You know, that's what makes these movies unique and not like everything else. You know, I love Marvel movies, but makes, you know, movies not just like every other superhero movie. So that's the hope, I think.
Oh, that's interesting, Amy. So because movies don't have to show, you know, we made X million dollars on that first big box office weekend, they have a little bit more flexibility on this. A lot more flexibility on this smaller scale. And so they may be more willing to take what they perceive as a risk. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I hope that that just the need for content, you know, more people get a shot. And then because maybe you're Netflix and not everything that Netflix does is going to go into a theater, you can have something like, they had a movie earlier this year called 40-year-old version, which was a really cute story about a woman writer who was nearing 40 and kind of hitting a wall in her career. And so she decided to go back to rap, which was a thing that she had done in her youth. That's a great story. And it was a really fun movie. And I hope that, you know, there's more opportunities for movies like that to get made, even if it has to start on sort of a streaming service, you know, before it can get to a big screen. Again, that's my optimistic view of the future.
I agree, though, that it is about money, like proving that things can be viable in the bigger marketplace. So like Crazy Rich Asians, like prove like an entire Asian cast could like carry this movie and make a lot of money, right? So it's definitely, but it's also about telling the spectrum of stories, right? Because like it's not just about rich Asian people, but that's the only identity that exists out there. So it's like telling the breadth of every person's experience, whether what race they are, what identity they have. Like, so I think it's, that it is true. It's like you have to kick down the door by making it, you know, a financially viable product. But hopefully, I agree, I feel like I'm trying to be optimistic too, is that those will lead to more opportunities. But I'm also that kind of person too that believes that like, ah, oh, like I want it faster and I want it now. So, but I agree.
What other firsts, Angie, are sort of getting your attention from this year's Oscar group? There has been a lot of talk about many, many firsts.
Oh, my goodness. I'm wondering if Amy can handle take this one better than I can, just simply because, you know, I think I revealed to you, I have not watched, I don't think, I'm just looking at this list right now. They're all on my list to watch, right? But I have not engaged with any of these current movies. I'm really kind of stuck in the past. So I don't know if Amy can speak to that, you know, any of the firsts that are coming up in this year's slate.
Sure. Go ahead, Amy. And we've talked about some of them, you know, woman directors and so forth. But go ahead, Amy.
So, yeah, the first time that two women have been nominated at the same time in directing. And then I believe Chloe Zhao is the first Asian woman and maybe the first woman of color who's ever been nominated for best director. I think Riz Ahmed in the lead actor category, I think he's the first Muslim person to be nominated, or at least first Muslim man maybe to ever be nominated for an Oscar. And there are more people of color throughout all of the acting nominations this year. I think that those two nominations for Lakeith Stanfield and Daniel Kaluuya, I think it's the first time there have been two African-American actors from the same, or two Black actors from the same movie nominated in the same category, I think. I think that's how that goes. So there, yeah, a lot of firsts, a lot more diversity, particularly in the acting nominations this year.
Sure, and Judas and the Black Messiah, the first movie with entirely Black producers nominated for Best Picture, Viola Davis becoming the most nominated Black actress in history with her fourth nomination for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. We could talk about Chadwick Boseman being nominated posthumously. That's not new, but boy, it's sad because he was a great actor. And it's, you know, maybe after the short break, we can talk a little bit more about that. We will take a quick break, though, now. And when we come back, we'll talk more about movies, play some more clips, and also just how the Academy Awards ceremony itself might play out. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
I listen to NHPR because it opens up my world.
Peg Hendel of Waterville Valley is a proud member of NHPR's Leadership Circle.
I really value the fair and well-researched and well-balanced information that I get. That's something I just had to support.
You too can join NHPR's growing family of Leadership Circle members when you invest $100 a month into the statewide news service you trust at nhpr.org/leaders.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, food truck chefs explain the joys and challenges of their work here in the Granite State. Join us for that conversation Thursday morning, live at 9. Today, with the delayed Academy Awards coming up soon, we're talking about the huge hit that the movie industry has taken this year and how it's been trying to recover. Exchange listeners, tell us, are you just as happy watching movies at home? How do you think audience preferences are changing, and what are some of your favorite movies that you've watched over the past year, Oscar nominated or not? You can join us with an email, exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 800-892-6477. We're talking with Angie Lane, Executive Director at Red River Theaters in Concord, also Amy Diaz, editor at The Hippo. And both of you, a couple emails coming in. Peggy says, I would like to recommend News of the World. The cinematography was beautiful. The movie had an authentic feel. The acting was superb. Peggy, thank you for that recommendation. Christy says, I saw The Father a couple of weeks ago, and I am still shaking my head in awe at the performance by Sir Anthony Hopkins. The emotional shifts and the overlapping scenes of reality versus his character's reality must have been incredibly challenging, and he was flawless. Christy says, I just cannot stop thinking about this movie. She also says, I also remember seeing the opening night of the original Jurassic Park. Thank you, Christy, and cannot wait to get back to Red River. There's nothing like seeing a movie in a theater. So both of you, let's talk about The Father. And Amy Diaz, I watched some of the trailers for this. Pretty compelling.
Yes, Anthony Hopkins really does give a spectacular performance. So he plays, I think this is based on a play, and he plays a man called Anthony who... is just sort of, I guess he's suffering from dementia and he's sort of losing his grip on everything, kind of time, memory. He can't always recognize people. Olivia Colman plays his daughter, except this movie, the movie does this great thing where in one scene, she's suddenly played by someone else to kind of put you in his shoes of how disoriented he feels and how losing control of everything he feels. And I would say that The Father and Sound of Metal both do the same thing, which is that they kind of put you in the central character's shoes and let you experience their disorientation. But The Father does a great job with that. And two standout performances, Anthony Hopkins, who's nominated in the lead actor role, and also Olivia Colman, who's nominated for supporting actress.
Well, and if you're a fan of The Crown, Olivia Colman plays the queen in the sort of later iteration of The Crown. It's so interesting what you said about how that movie puts you for a moment in Anthony Hopkins' shoes to just try and show you how the world feels to him. Let's play a little clip of that scene, actually, that you just mentioned, Amy, where a different actress than Olivia Colman walks in playing his daughter. Let's hear.
Dad, I'd like you to meet Laura.
How do you do, sir?
I say you're gorgeous.
Thank you. I must say he's charming.
Yeah, not always. Laura has come round to help you.
I don't need her or anyone else. I can manage very well on my own.
Everything all right?
Who are you?
Ashley, it's me, Paul.
Who?
I live here.
What is this nonsense? Anne?
It's me.
Ah, there she is.
Your father seemed a bit confused.
Something wrong?
Where's Anne?
Sorry?
Ma'am, where is he?
I'm here.
Oh my goodness, again, that's a clip from The Father. And Anthony Hopkins, we've been talking about firsts. He's the oldest ever Best Actor nominee at age 83. Here's an email from Michael who says, am I nuts or was there a lack of animated family movies this year? Michael says, seems like we had The Croods and Soul and that was it. Amy Diaz, I know you're a big fan of these animated movies. Go ahead.
So actually, the animated movies are one of the groups that have actually done not great compared to pre-pandemic levels, but they bring in an audience for in-theater screenings. And it kind of makes sense because it's little kids. You go, you know, you sit in your own pod. But it was a good year for animated films. So the nominated ones for Oscar this year are Onward and Soul, which are both Disney ones. Over the Moon, which is on Netflix, Wolfwalkers, which is absolutely beautiful. So this one is on Apple TV Plus. Yes, another streaming service.
Yeah.
but it's absolutely beautiful. It's the story of a girl in Ireland, an English girl who goes to Ireland and befriends a girl in Ireland who can turn into a wolf. It has a very fairy tale appearance. It's beautiful. And then the other nominee is actually one of my personal favorites. It's a Shaun the Sheep movie, Farmageddon, So this is on Netflix. So this is partly my favorite because my kids all love it. It's the rare rated G movie. So basically, if your kid can sit still for a movie, he's probably, he or she is probably okay to watch Farmageddon. It's done by Aardman Entertainment. They're the Wallace and Gromit people. And so it has that kind of rounded look. All of the characters, there's actually no dialogue in Farmageddon. They all speak in, I said in my review, British-y grunts. And little animal chirpy noises. It's sweet. It's funny. It's a charming movie.
You heard it here first. British-y grunts. That's good. Yeah. So, yeah. So, Angie, to you, you know this better than me. I mean, last spring, production companies pushed ahead their in-theater release dates to the summer. They said, oh, yes, yes, it'll be out in the summer. And then, oh, yes, yes, it'll be out in the fall. Then finally just abandoned those in-theater plans completely to streaming services. What's the word, Angie, for this year?
It is still fluid. So we definitely are seeing some release dates hold for now, because that can always change. So, you know, I believe that the sequel to The Quiet Place is still set for May, for late May. And then The Heights, which is the musical version, movie version The Heights is a musical with and it's attached with Lin-Manuel, who was part of Hamilton. So that's set for June. So like those things are holding tight, but there's still a lot of distributors pushing things still to the fall and a lack of really bigger titles. And then again, there's still people just going direct to video on demand. Black Widow, I think, is going back directly to Disney Plus. That was plan to have a big release. But so I think we're still in this mode where there is figuring out what the confidence is for the safety of theaters to reopen and to really have those big opening weekends. We see in China, they've been able to control the pandemic and people are going back to the movies in droves. And so I think that is hopefully will be the case here when we are able to safely reopen. But people don't know, right? Because people are still getting vaccinated and there's still talk about second waves. So we're kind of in this limbo still and people are still moving dates constantly. So I am not confident ever saying like, yes, this is something we can count on. But I'm hopefully, I'm optimistic though, seeing that there are some of these bigger titles that are at least holding on to being released into the theaters, which is exciting because that's not where we were last year.
Wow. And it's so stressful for you, Angie, I can imagine. I mean, you're a movie executive director. You're not an epidemiologist, or a public health expert. Like, how are you making that decision to reopen and who's helping you? Because it's obviously a decision you can't make on your own.
Oh, absolutely. Because you're right. I'm not an expert in the field of epidemiology. But I mean, the biggest thing for us is obviously safety, right? Because we are a movie theater and we in particular are actually below ground. So, we've definitely worked on updating, the air system and putting in all the different protocols of like social distancing signs and things like that. But for now, the social distancing guidelines are still prohibitive for us because they only, keeping people 6 feet apart in the movie theater means that we can only sell so many tickets. But also just the safety of our staff and the people that come in, having the confidence that they feel comfortable doing so. And then the second huge part of it is product. And like, when can we expect to have, viable titles that will bring people in and hopefully fill the theater again. And right now, we're shooting for, we're holding on to some, dates that we believe that we could maybe do a phased reopening in July, which is far sooner than we thought we were going to be. If you had asked me in January, we were thinking fall again. So in a lot of ways, we're really optimistic. But again, it'll be phased. We'll probably reopen 2 to 3 days a week with maybe a few shows. And then as things progress, and hopefully I'm going to hold on to that optimism that things will progress that we'll have the social distancing guidelines lifted. But we are making the decisions at the board level. We are a nonprofit, so I have a great board of people who are in the professional field, like medical, field who can help us make these decisions. Because even though state guidelines might say one thing, we are definitely taking into consideration all of the information that we're getting from, you know, the CDC and the state too. So we are meeting literally every week because things are changing so quickly. But we are, you know, cautiously optimistic because we have not had this great of like news, consistently good news for a long time. So like the fact that people are coming out to get vaccinated and people are wearing their masks, like we're hopeful.
Yeah, well, I won't hold you to that date because, yeah, it's just fluid. And we've learned over the past year plus how things can change. I am curious, Amy, you know, about the pipeline of movies, and Angie kind of alluded to this. I mean, are enough movies being made right now so that when the theaters all open, and some already are open, they'll have some good stuff to show?
Well, I think, so you have those movies that have just been held. There have been, especially the bigger kind of tentpole movies. You know, she mentioned Black Widow, so that's been held for a year. And I think it's going to get what they call a day and date release. So it'll be in theaters and also on Disney Plus. And that's the same thing with In the Heights, which is the one I am waiting for. That one's going to come out, I think, HBO Max and also in theaters. So hopefully I'll get to see that in a theater. And then there's things like the ninth Fast and the Furious movie. I don't know that I ever thought I would be this excited for the ninth Fast and the Furious movie, but it is scheduled in June. So, you know, if there can be theaters in June, if everything can be open kind of as people are planning and hope that they will, there will be movies to see. A lot of those movies that have been held, the movies they've been working on sort of slowly during, you know, the last year. So maybe not the crush that we would have gotten, but definitely things are on the schedule.
All right. Well, both of you, it's been great to talk to you. And Angie, thank you very much for being with us.
No, thanks for having me.
That's Angie Lane, Executive Director of Red River Theaters in Concord. And Amy Diaz, it's always good to have you too. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
That's Amy Diaz, editor at The Hippo. Today's show was produced by Exchange producer Jane Vaughn. Thanks everybody for being with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.